The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, with John Mueller. Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love when the stars above came out.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. The one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. It's a fact that millions of Europeans and North Americans have already made that big move south of the border. You might know someone who already has. Maybe it's your dream to do it someday. Well, it's a big move, and it's not to be taken lightly. And that's just what this show is all about. What's it really like for first-world expats to live in the third world? Could be. It's just a low-stress, low-maintenance kind of lifestyle that you've always wanted. Or it could be your worst nightmare. How do you really know? On this show, we'll talk about things you never read about in those glossy travel magazines. As for me, 20 years ago, I took the plunge. I've knocked around all 21 Latin American countries, built a few houses, started a few businesses, and even found time for some romance. With this show, The Expat Files, I'll be giving you an unvarnished, realistic look at what it's really like to live as an expat down in Latin America. We'll be talking about everything and anything Latin American. And if you have your own questions, just shoot me an email. That's expatfiles@progressiveradionetwork.com. So let's get started. On today's show, we'll be talking about bad cops and good cops, bad employees and good employees, how doing business in Latin America is practically a no-brainer, and how the Mayan 2012 prophecy has turned into big business down here. And because of huge first world interest, everyone and his brother is suddenly a shaman.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
Just recently I've had a few emails asking me about the Mayan prophecies and the 2012 calendar. The whole Mayan prophecy thing has snowballed, really taken off in the first world, especially in California, and with every former hippie in the sandals and sunflower seed crowd. Now, even in times of financial crisis, when the world is tightening its belt, first world tourists are still making pilgrimages down to every Mayan site or ruin on the map. Now, for those of you who are geographically and or historically challenged, the Mayan civilization encompassed parts of Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, and El Salvador. And there's at least 100 great tourist destinations where you'll find all kinds of artifacts, temples and ruins and half-buried cities. And yes, that stuff is truly amazing. But to me, what's more amazing is how the locals down in Central America have figured out 1,001 ways to fleece gullible first world tourists who come down thinking they're going to have some kind of special mystical experience. And as the clock ticks closer to that magical date, December 21st, 2012, the mystical date that everyone knows is the very last day on the Mayan calendar, tourist groups of pasty-looking first-world eco-adventure types can be seen trudging through the Mexican and Guatemalan highlands, clinging to every word their Mayan tour guide says, and snapping up every cute little wooden Mayan reproduction of a fertility god they can get their grubby little hands on. And of course, the local shaman takes MasterCard and Visa. And speaking of shamans, it's interesting that 5 or 6 years ago, before the 2012 phenomena took off in a huge way back in the first world, and way before the 2012 Hollywood blockbuster movie, well, the fact is, you could have searched all through Latin America, through all the old Mayan ruins and temples, in all the Latin countries far and wide, and not encountered a single shaman, or anyone who would admit to being a shaman anyway. Sure, at every ruin you'd find your experts, your archaeologists, your historians, your college anthropology students. At every site, there's always people digging around and looking for more artifacts. And of course, you'd have your little trickle of backpackers and tourists, always being led around by some local scruffy-looking tour guide. And suddenly, about 5 or 6 years ago, up in the first world, a slew of 2012 prophecy books hit the bookshelves. I tell you, nothing could have drummed up the Latin American tourist business better than an end-of-the-world prophecy spelled out by some long-dead civilization, like the Mayans. And what makes the whole thing even more interesting is that the Mayans made human sacrifices to the gods. Morbid stuff like that is always good for the tourist business. And of course, we all know they were into bloody massacre and ripping out people's hearts. That said, you can find plenty of so-called experts who will say the end of the world is predicted at the very end of a 5,125-year calendar cycle, at least according to Mayan prophecy. Well, when you think about it, no first world marketing firm could have planned an ad campaign any better. And now, just 1 year before that magic date, December 21st, 2012, things are really coming to a head down here. The Mayan tourist sites are booked solid. In fact, they're overbooked, and that's never happened before. And what makes me and my expat friends laugh so hard is that suddenly there are so-called Mayan shamans everywhere. They're coming out of the woodwork. In fact, it seems that every short, brown, indigenous person that lives anywhere near a Mayan ruin has become an expert in everything Mayan. Not to mention that these days, everybody claims to have Mayan blood running through their veins. And not just a little bit either. Whereas a few years ago, no one had ever seen or heard of a Mayan shaman or a witch doctor. Now suddenly, as 2012 approaches, every tiny town has a half dozen or more. And they're all dressed up in their finest typical robes and beads, like they're ready to scale a pyramid and cut out a few hearts, just like in the old days. And they've got their own loyal followers, too. Plenty of followers. Local indigenous guys who make noise and bang drums and blow on indigenous instruments and flutes, while the shaman lights his incense and makes incantations and talks to the gods. Whereas a few years ago, he was that same guy cutting cane in the farm fields for minimum wage, like $5 a day. These days, it's usual for him to have a dozen tourists on his trail, following his every move, listening to his every word. And each one of those tourists gives him at least a $5 tip. So thanks to the Mayans in 2012 and the first world interest in it, he makes 10 times what he used to make just a few years ago. And he doesn't even have to break a sweat. And he dresses cool. And he's important. And he gets respect. Well, at least from the first world people he's managed to con. But is it really a con? I don't think so. Me and my expat friends look at it in a little different way. To us, it's a show. It's like Disneyland. Parents spend a lot of money to take their kids to see Minnie and Mickey and Goofy, but they're just people in costumes, though we try not to think about it or it ruins the show. And down here, the tourists keep coming more and more every day. The closer we get to 2012, the more the tourists arrive. And as more tourists arrive, the prices for the accommodations go up, and the prices escalate on the trinkets and the fake Mayan tourist items, a good percentage of which are made in China. But for the locals down here, it's very good business, and some of them are cleaning up, especially the ones who jumped on the bandwagon early. And what's going to happen on December 22nd, the day after the end of the world? I guess it's back to the sugarcane fields and the coffee plantations. But you know what? It's going to be a great opportunity for first world tourists. Anyone who comes here after the fact is going to get some great hotel deals. And you can bet they'll be giving away those 2012 tourist trinkets. It'll be just like the day after the Super Bowl, when everybody's in a huge rush to leave town and the hats and t-shirts are at half price. But today, with a year left to go before 2012, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a shaman. In fact, the shamans are charging for photos now. And if you whip out your camera and don't whip out a couple of bucks for the shaman, he'll put a curse on you, and he'll let you know it. But it's also true that the tourists who do come down here and spend some time at the pyramids and the ruins and have a few sessions with the local shaman, well, they're as happy as clams, and for them, it's a one-of-a-kind experience. And they head back home with a trunk full of memories and good experiences. I'm sure it's one of those things they'll remember all their lives. So who am I to burst anyone's bubble? And there's something to be said for the fact that each and every one of these first world tourists, if you bother to sit down and have a cup of coffee with them, you'll find they'll report that they had some kind of unexplainable energetic experience, whether it happened when they climbed to the top of the pyramid number 5 in Tikal, or during a spiritual trance invoked by one of the shamans. A lot of tourists claim they're connecting with something spiritual, which really does make the whole thing worthwhile for some people. Which is why I always hesitate to bring up another fact about the local indigenous culture and the Mayan connection. If you were to talk to any of the local indigenous people, you'd find out they're very proud of their Mayan heritage. And rightfully so, especially seeing their pyramids and knowing how advanced they were. In some cases, much more advanced than societies that were living in Europe at the time. However, if you talk to anthropologists who have studied the Mayan culture and who've studied the indigenous populations living in the Mayan highlands today, there seems to be a growing body of evidence through DNA analysis that almost none of the indigenous people living today are direct ancestors of the true Mayan city dwellers that built the great pyramids and monuments that we see today. DNA studies of the indigenous tribes today have shown that their direct ancestors actually came from smaller, splintered tribes from Mexico that migrated down through Central America after the true Mayan culture disappeared. And you can imagine this is not a very popular theme at all through Central America. For the local people, it's a huge letdown, so no one talks about it. It's as if you were Einstein's kid and you suddenly found out you were adopted. Needless to say, it's not a very popular topic. In fact, in some of the smaller towns, if you mention it, they might call out a lynching party. And I'm not kidding. In some places in Latin America, especially the small towns, lynchings are still a popular spectator sport. And we'll be talking more about lynchings in a later show.
South of the border.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you everything and anything you ever wanted to know about living as an expat in Latin America. And now it's time for a segment I like to call Only in Latin America, where I report on strange things happening in Latin America that you'll probably never find anywhere else. One of the stranger things you'll encounter as an expat, first moving down to Latin America, is when you pick up the classified ads in a newspaper. Like today, when I picked up the classified ads from a Honduran newspaper, and I noticed right away in the back pages about 6 or 7 announcements. Strange announcements. Stuff you'll never find up in the first world. In this case, one of the big cellular telephone companies, Claro, has an announcement about two of its former employees. I'll just tell you their first names. One's Eddie and one's Audie. And they've included color photos of these two people, along with their passport and national ID numbers. The announcement goes on to say that these two people have been fired recently and that Claro, the parent company, is not responsible for any business dealings or transactions that you, the consumer, may have entered into with them after the date of November 11, 2010. And also that they are not permitted to enter in any transactions in the name of Claro since they are no longer affiliated with the company. And if you do business with these two, you do it at your own risk. So actually what this is a disclaimer. A warning not to do any business with two unsavory ex-employees. Now the calling out of particularly bad employees by name in the paper, printing their photos and mentioning that they've been fired, and saying that their former company is no longer responsible for any of their business actions. Well, seeing announcements like that in the paper is a routine occurrence in Latin America. And just the fact that a company would spend the money to take an ad out to warn the public is a perfect indictment of the legal and law enforcement community in Latin America. It's a great example for criminals, and it proves that crime pays down here, and that the law enforcement and legal systems are powerless, if not completely useless, especially with white-collar crime like this. But that's not my only example of crime and impunity today. Now, in the paper right next to this announcement is another announcement. A company from the United States is offering a 6-week-long polygraph course to be given at one of the local big hotels. I was curious about this, so I called the number and spoke to the polygraph expert. As it turns out, there's a huge demand, in fact, a huge backlog, for polygraph experts and polygraph services throughout Latin America, especially with the influx of first world companies and franchises. The polygraph expert told me there's a dire need for polygraphistas, technical people who speak Spanish and can operate the lie detector machines. Okay, so here's where it gets interesting. The expert told me that when they get a call from a big company, an international company, it's almost always to do a polygraph test on new employees. Because it seems, a few years back when the polygraph business first entered Latin America, they noticed that if they polygraphed existing employees, more than half of them would fail the test. So the boss can't fire half his employees. And my question was, how detailed is the test? I mean, if you ask someone if they ever stole anything, I mean, who hasn't taken a pen or a pencil or a towel from a hotel? Well, the specialist told me they have that covered. When it comes to stealing, they ask the prospective employee if they've ever stolen anything worth more than $200. which is just short of the average guy's monthly salary in Latin America. So relatively speaking, that would be a pretty good sized crime. In first world terms, that would be about like stealing $3,000. No small thing. So here's the kicker. It seems that in Latin America, every big company that has over maybe 200 employees now wants its own in-house poligrafista as part of the human resources department. And that's so they don't have to farm out the work to one of the more expensive security companies that provides polygraph services. So when I asked the polygraph specialist, just how dishonest are the Latin American employees? And how do they compare to the people put under a polygraph in the first world? Well, he just laughed and referred me to an international news article on the internet from November 25th. Let me paraphrase from this article. There's a Guatemalan city called Misco, and it has 1.3 million people. It says in precinct number 16 in Misco, they have a model police station with all the latest and greatest equipment donated from the first world. It has a police detail of 600 active agents. And since the city of Misco is one of the most dangerous cities in Guatemala, with one of the highest crime and corruption rates, under pressure from the United States ambassador, the mayor of Misco ordered that all 600 agents be polygraphed. And the result? 306 out of the 600 policemen were fired, either because they failed the polygraph or they refused to take it. And what makes this story even crazier is that this is the second time the mayor, his name is Almícar Rivera, forced all the policemen in that agency, all 600, to take a polygraph. And the first time, a year and a half ago, 285 of the 600 policemen were fired. Again, either because they failed the polygraph or refused to take it. Now the thing is, if a cop refuses to take a polygraph, he automatically gets fired. Because when you sign your employment contract, it says right in the fine print that they're allowed to polygraph you. Now, there's something else about polygraphs that just might bother the average person. They're not really that accurate, and they never were. Although, if you ask the average man on the street, he believes they work in a kind of magical, occultish kind of way. In fact, you can go on the internet and find any number of articles on how to beat one. Even polygraph specialists are in agreement on that. And specialists have told me that before any polygraph exam in the first world, they ask the test subject if he's ever read a book or article on how to beat a polygraph. And if a subject has, the specialist has a much harder time reading the results. So what does all this have to do with employees and police taking polygraphs in Latin America? Well, this is going to surprise you. A first world polygraph specialist working out of one of the embassies down here in Latin America told me this. Every single Latin American person he's ever asked believes that a polygraph works 100% of the time, that it's virtually infallible. Whereas in the first world, only about 50% of the people believe that a polygraph is truly accurate. And because nearly all Latin American people believe that this polygraph machine, this first world piece of technology, is pretty much infallible, they're scared to death of it. And that in itself is a great psychological advantage for the polygraph specialist. In fact, I've been told that the average Latin who walks in for a polygraph test is so uptight and nervous about the whole process that the polygraph specialist can spot a truly bad guy by his body language before he even gets into the meat of the test. So the natural question to ask the polygraph specialist is how could half of the police force fail or refuse to take a polygraph? He said that has an easy answer. And all you have to do is look in the back of any Latin American newspaper when any police department is having a recruitment drive. Just look at the minimum requirements necessary to get a spot in the police academy. Almost every Latin American country requires a minimum 6th grade education. 6th grade. What? 6th grade? Whatever happened to a degree in police science? Isn't that pretty much the standard in the first world? But we're not in the first world. And what about a degree in police science? Well, hate to tell you this, but that kind of career path hasn't much landed in the third world yet. But they are talking about it. Then the polygraph specialist gave me another startling bit of information. He said, in Latin America, 95% of all the policemen who enter the police academy don't have a driver's license and have never even driven a car. Of course, because they can't afford one. So in effect, you got traffic cops who never drove before enforcing traffic laws they know nothing about. And you might want to know, the average policeman in Latin America makes about $400 to $500 a month. About twice what the average worker makes, but still not quite enough to own and operate even a junky car. So down here, when a cop graduates from the police academy, they run him through a driver's ed course and give him a fast track to a license. Now you got a guy on the road who's never really driven a car before and never had any practice. And on top of all that, he has no idea how to take care of a car and doesn't know a single thing about maintenance. And that's why expats always notice that nearly every police car is banged and dinged and damaged like it was in the demolition derby. And one thing the expats have to watch out for in dealing with traffic police is that they always try to nick you for some money. Not big money, really, but they'll always seem to find something wrong with your papers or your car. And if your Spanish is not so good, you'll have no luck trying to argue your way out of it. Their usual game is to pull you over, or in most cases, they'll just have a roadblock set up, and they'll stop a car every now and then. Oh, and about roadblocks. You'll see roadblocks in every Latin American country, and it's not because they're looking for a criminal or a terrorist or someone bringing in a load of drugs or hand grenades. Just get used to the fact that roadblocks are all over Latin America. It's just a custom with them, a tradition. They don't go in for high-speed cop car chases like you see in the movies. It's not their style. They much rather sit around at a roadblock and read the paper and drink a Coke and shoot the bull with their buddies and pull a car over once in a while. Latins are laid back like that, even the cops. And that's not because they're inherently lazy. Well, no more than any other government workers anyhow. But because traditionally, they're not issued enough gasoline to keep their cars running on the road all day. Each cruiser only gets a few gallons of gas a day. And it's pretty common for some of that to get siphoned off and sold by the cops in charge. The gasoline shortage for cops is so critical. Even in Venezuela, which is a top OPEC producer, well, I've seen it myself in 3 different Latin countries where I've been pulled over. And the police have actually asked me for a donation so they could buy gas for their cruiser. They were nice about it. I gave them a couple bucks. Because, you know, they're in a power position and you really don't want to say no to these guys. And that's why I keep a couple of Coca-Colas in the car. Because when you're pulled over and you hand it to the cop, you're halfway home already. Sometimes you just feel sorry for these guys. But a roadblock, you say? Isn't that illegal? Pull you over without prior cause? Habeas corpus and all that stuff? I'm telling you, even if you could spit out the word search warrant in perfect Spanish, they're just going to laugh at you. There's really no harm letting a cop look in your trunk or under your floorboard. In fact, it's not really wise to refuse. They've done it to me 100 times. They're not going to plant a gun on you or drugs or anything. Those stories, I don't know where they come from. But in my 20 years down here, I don't know of a single expat who's ever had anything illegal planted on him by a cop. But you should know one thing. If a cop asks to go inside your car and check it out, and he'll usually preface that with a question, ¿Porta armas? Which means, are you carrying a gun? And you better say no to that. Just be advised that if he's going to go in your car, take your cellular phone and your BlackBerry and anything that you've got that's portable and has value to you. Because though these guys won't plant anything on you, I've heard dozens of stories from expats who've said that once they got back in their car, their cell phones or their iPods went missing. So how do they nick you for extra money? Which is called mordida, by the way, and mordida means to take a bite in Spanish. To take that bite, the policeman will say, there's something wrong with your papers. The date's wrong. The stamp is wrong. You'll find something. And if you're smart, you'll say, how much is the ticket? I'd like to pay it right now. And if he says something crazy like $100, you say, well, all I have is $10 on me right now, or $5. And that'll usually work. Because you know in the real world, you can never pay your fine directly to the cop who's given you the ticket. Now, usually, they're more than happy with $5 or $10. The exception to that is if you're pulled over late at night or right around Christmas time. In my case, last Christmas, I was pulled over in El Salvador, and the police asked me for $200. I got them down to $75. But when I looked at my wallet, I actually didn't have that much cash on me. So you know what they did? They drove me to an ATM machine, a police escort. That was an experience. Well, we all got more expenses around the holidays now, don't we? I should have known better, because it was 2 days before Christmas and I shouldn't have been out that late. But I started this piece with an announcement in the paper about two employees that got fired from Claro, the cell phone company. Well, let me finish this off by telling you next to that announcement, in the local paper, is another strange announcement, but common as can be in Latin America. In this announcement, a trucking company is offering a big reward for three different semi-trailers that had been stolen with all the goods inside. A Freightliner, a Fruhoff, and a Ford. It gives two phone numbers to call and says, call if you have any information about our three missing trucks. And then it has in big letters, don't be embarrassed to call. Hey, listen, you know, if I stole three trucks, I would be way beyond embarrassment. Now, the interesting thing about this kind of theft in Latin America is that in more than half of the cases, the thief will try to sell your property back to you. In fact, what will happen is you'll get a phone call and someone will say, for X amount of dollars, you can have your truck back in perfect condition. And if you pay what they want, they usually honor the rest of the deal. The bottom line advice for an expat is, once again, if you don't drive a late model car, the bad guys will leave you alone. The bigger question is, are most Latin American cops corrupt? Well, around the holidays, that might be true, though there are always exceptions. And do I condone bribing the police? Well, let's just say, if you're pulled over at midnight and you're confronted with a law enforcement official who has a gun and a sixth grade education, $5 or $10 is a small price to pay. And who knows, you might even get a police escort to the nearest ATM machine. In a later show, we'll be talking more about car theft and GPSs and insurance, and more about Latin American cops and law enforcement and lack thereof. So stay tuned.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, with me, John Mueller. Be sure to tune in every Monday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for The Expat Files, a one-of-a-kind show produced and compiled deep in the heart of Latin America, the only show on the air that takes an honest look at what it's really like to live, work, play, or simply retire in Latin America. And don't forget, all the shows are archived. So to download any previous show for free, just go to the Progressive Radio Network homepage at www.progressiveradionetwork.com and click on the archives. And of course, you can always email me with any of your questions about Latin America, expatfiles@progressiveradionetwork.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
Then she sighed as she whispered, mañana, never dreaming that we were parting. And I lied as I whispered, mañana, 'cause our tomorrow.